Blog Talk Radio.
Call in number, or you can send us a chat
We're going to open up the chat line right now. In fact, I'm opening it up. Gary or Monica, you guys can maybe monitor the chat line. You just go in and just click on the chat and the switchboard, open it up. And we'll see if you have any questions. You don't want to call in, you can just text them to us and we'll get right to them as soon as possible. But what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break. And then we're going to come back and we're going to get into a discussion and see what we can come about for today. So just stay tuned and we'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to the show. You're listening to Health Talk Live. I'm your host, MD Shaheed, along with Gary and Monica. If you have any questions you want to call in and ask today, feel free so to do. This is Ask the Scientist. You can call us right now at 347-202-0758. That's 347-202-0758. You got a question, we got an answer. Call in right now today. Also, don't forget to check out our all-natural and organic product line at www.xcel-n.com. Okay, Gary and Monica, how we look today? What kind of questions we're going to be talking about? Where should we start? Whatever you guys said you had to ask, let's get right to it, and we'll deal with the subject matter as it comes up.
Okay, fantastic. I thought, let's start with the very basics. I know we've probably discussed this on previous shows. As a matter of fact, you just gave me a wonderful segue for my question, and that is, what is the difference between natural and organic?
What's the difference between natural and organic? Okay, that's a real good question, Monica, and it's really not well defined and understood in the general public, and even more so even in what we call regulatory food or health agencies. Even the FDA really doesn't have a true definition for a natural. And in fact, they tend to assume almost everything is natural. And to some degree, from a scientific point of view, that's true. But they do have some standards, not necessarily definition, but they have some standards that's been adopted by various health organizations or health affiliations or health associations that is comprised of different companies that produce, manufacture, and sell organic products. And that's why sometimes when you go to the store, some stores, not all stores, but many stores now have it. And in fact, the FDA requires it to a degree. I'm not sure if it's under statute. Statute means it has been legislated, but maybe just in the register, but they do require some difference in terms of organic and natural. And that's why you see some products have the label organic on them, and some products that don't have the label on them and really considered natural. Now, I know it seems like I went around the way, but I needed to set the premise for what I'm about to say. That being said, some companies have developed standards for organic. When we talk about organic, I'll deal with that first because organic is a lot easier to define, maybe not to describe, but to define. An organic substance is any product that has not been developed, meaning growing it or prepping it, has been developed, or it has been developed without the use of steroids, antibiotics, or hormones, pesticides, herbicides, and even without the use of synthetic fertilizers. Organic is supposed to be where you can trace that product all the way back to its inception, and they use natural fertilizers. We know what natural fertilizer is. If you ever been to the country, you know what natural fertilizer is.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that's right. And they use those things all the way up to market, and even to control pesticides, they tend to try to use a lot of natural substances because we know now there are certain oils like orange oil, or the extract of orange oil, even lavender, and now some people say Australian tea tree oil can be made into like different sprays and mists that can control insect infestation. So the products that have organic, it means they went through these processes and they haven't been, and they can clearly say, or at least they say they claim, they verify, essentially they verify, because there's really no regulatory agency out there verifying them, that they are in fact organic. Natural is a much wider definition. And many people say this is natural because it came from the earth. Well, I mean, cockroaches come from the earth. That's natural too, but I don't see many people running to eat them. You know, there's a lot of things that's natural. You know, poison ivy comes from the earth. And I bet you won't lay down in no poison. I bet you won't take that plant home and put it in your backyard. There's a lot of things that's natural. So natural doesn't always mean good. But that's the basic what people think is natural. But from a scientific point of view, being a natural scientist, a natural substance or a natural material would be any material, and that could be any chemical that has not, that you can prove that has not been adulterated. Adulterated means changed significantly, such that it will not have its original activity and original structure. And I know structure, when I'm saying structure now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking on a molecular level. This is below just looking at the product. For example, vitamin C. Vitamin C comes naturally from oranges and other citrus fruits. But we know the structure of vitamin C. But I can synthesize vitamin C in the lab, just vitamin C. And I'm using vitamin C because vitamin C is one of those unique chemical substances that the good Lord has produced that's a standalone. There is but one vitamin C. It's not like vitamin E where you have 4 to 8 different isomers. It's not like a green tea extract where you have these polyphenols or the materials from grapes. Vitamin C is a standalone substance, meaning you get it just the way it is. And we can identify, and it's easy to identify. And quickly to finish this up, is that I can synthesize vitamin E in the laboratory, and it'll look just like the vitamin E you got from the orange. I can lay it right on top, and you will not be able to tell the difference, not through taste. If you put it in a chemical reaction, it's going to react the same way. If you put it in your body, it's going to react the same way. It's going to have the same stability. There will be no difference. So in substance, that's a natural product too, although it wasn't derived from the fruit. But in general, we tend to say that the definition of the natural material is different than the definition of organic. And I gave you already the definition of organic. So that's where you see, in other words, you can grow that orange, but I can use fertilizer. I can use pesticide. It's still natural. And I can extract that vitamin C. You see what I'm saying? I can extract that vitamin C. It's still natural, but it's not organic.
Oh, okay. So a natural, you can duplicate that in the lab, and it still can, and it's still like the vitamin C. If you can duplicate that in the lab, that would still be considered natural?
That's a natural product, yeah. Because the only thing I did is did what Mother Nature did. See, Mother Nature doesn't say man can't duplicate what she does. In fact, Mother Nature encourages it. That's why we have the ability to think. Otherwise, we'd be like the dogs and the cats. We'd be contained in our natural habitat. We'd be contained under natural law. But man, with his ability to think, can gravitate above natural law. So Mother Nature has encouraged it that we investigate these things. But it wouldn't be organic orange, it'd be a natural orange. Now, organic orange, that vitamin C in the laboratory would not be organic.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That's
the definition of natural, and that's the definition that the FDA somewhat has adopted. You know, I put out a definition of natural about 10 years ago, and it appears in the last 2 years, you know, a lot of the scientific community is actually adopting my definition of natural, although the people in organics, the people who sell organic materials, they have reluctantly continue to do what they do. But that's all right. That's just the name of the business. So that's the
That's so wild is that how much more expensive organic is when basically you're taking that product like from the ground to the market, and they want to charge you more.
Well, they want to charge you more because it takes a lot more work to do organic. When you grow organic products, whether they're foods or even milks or things like organic cow or goats, you have to tend to them a lot more. It's a lot more work because, you know, the pesticides and things like that, herbicides, you can just throw them on the ground. The fertilizer, you can put them in the earth and just walk on about your business. But when you do it organic farming, there's a lot more work, Monica. There's a lot of work. You have to stay on top of your products. You can lose them, particularly in the cooler months or the warmer season, depends upon the products that you're trying to grow or develop. So there's a lot more work, and so that drives the cost up. You know, when you're feeding cows and chickens and things, you can't feed them bones and you know, they don't feed them bones and ground body parts from dead animals and blood. You know, they make blood products and mix it in with a little grain and feed it to they take the pigs, dead pigs, and I don't want to get into this, but a lot of dead pig matter that they can't sell. Much because more people get into the more health conscious, they take a lot of that and they grind it up, mix it in with other feedstock, and they feed. It's a cheap feed, you know, for chickens and everything else, you know. But in organics, you have to let the chickens roam around on a free range. That's what they call them, free range chickens. They're not in cages. Right. They roam around on a, like, you know, like walk around like in the old days in the country, and they feed them the highest grain, you know, And it takes, so they don't give them hormones and antibiotics, so they don't grow that fast. So they, you know, in the chicken business, you know, they keep these chickens caged up. They never get out of a cage, and they feed them all these drugs to make them get fat really quick so they can take them to the market to slaughter. Whereas the free-range chickens, no cage chickens, they roam around just like, you know, they having a party. They got, you know, they don't know they're going to be slaughtered in a few months. But they just walking around all nice and free, and they eat, and they see that, and so they could get a lot of infections, so you have to watch them and maintain them so it drives the cost up. It drives the cost up in terms of competing against the pharmaceutical farms. See, a lot of people don't know Bayer, Bristol-Myers, what's the big pharmaceutical company, Merck, and the Upjohn. That makes the Rogaine, Upjohn, that makes Rogaine. They own much of the farm products in America today. So any drugs they can't sell to you, they just give them to their chickens and their cows and their pigs. They say, you're gonna take this drug one way or the other, you know. you don't want my vaccine. You don't want to take my antibiotic. I'll give it to the chickens because it's gonna make them all fat, and the pigs and the cows, and then you gonna take them too. So they own. If you go do your research, and you go into and find out who owns stock, you'll find out that these companies own much of the farming now in America. They call it corporate farming now. These corporate farms. You see, so they do it so cheap, it makes it very difficult for the organic farmer to compete, so it drives the cost up.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And thanks for clarifying that. I always wondered about that, because you see so much out there now, and we assume everything that's natural is good for us, everything that's organic is good for us, but you still have to be selective.
That's true.
Very interesting. I guess that kind of almost leads into what my question would be. What is the difference between nutraceuticals and pharmaceuticals?
Nutraceuticals is what we do at Excel Nutraceuticals, and there are other nutraceuticals companies around the world. Most of them are in Europe right now, and also South America. There are some nutraceutical companies here in the States. Interestingly, the Mormons were one of the first ones to develop nutraceuticals companies and to demonstrate that the business can be profitable. So a lot of companies, in fact, there is one company called Nutraceutical. That's what the company is called, Nutraceutical. It's a conglomerate of smaller companies. In the past, you may know of Solaray is now under the Nutraceutical umbrella. Kyle used to be heavy into athletic protein products and also vitamins. And I think SolarGuard and SolarGreen, which were small companies, are now under the Nutraceutical umbrella. And these companies come together mainly because to be able to compete against the pharmaceutical companies and to protect pharmaceutical companies from buying them out. Many of these companies have been bought out. I think Colgate, Palmolive bought out what's that company? Was it called the Beeswax Company? What was the name of that company? I'm not sure. It's Burt's. Burt's. Burt's is now owned by Burt's is now owned by a pharmaceutical company, and you can look at their product line, and they've been introducing slowly over the last 3 years some of their products that they make in pharmaceuticals. But the difference is nutraceuticals are mainly companies that develop products from natural sources to address certain needs in everyday man, as well as certain health problems. most nutraceuticals means it could be a combination of vitamins, it could be a combination of herbs, natural oils, essential oils, certain plant extracts. They're all combined to make products to address certain physical and health situations. And it could, you don't have to be sick. It could be for your daily upkeep, daily maintenance. It's the same thing pharmaceuticals do. It does. The nutraceutical products, they do use chemistry. They have reactors, just like pharmaceuticals. A lot of people think they just go out and pull up, you know, the olive oil and a plant and just twist. You know how you twist a, if you ever wash dishes, well, many people don't wash dishes nowadays. They just rinse them and they put them in the wash and dry or whatever. But when I was growing up, you had to wash dishes or you had to mop the floor and you had to take that mop. And if you didn't have a ring and you had to twist it with your hand, I don't know if you remember that. When I used to work, when I first started working, you know, as a young man, about 14 years old, you had to twist that mop and then wring it out. Well, you know, a lot of people, even in today's supposedly highly educated society, they think you just go out there and, oh, I'm going to get the jojoba oil, girl, and, oh, man, I'm using this shea butter. They just think you go out there and you twist that plant like you twist that mop, and that oil just drop out. You know, no, it doesn't work like that. They have to process. It goes through a chemical process, a manufactured process. And I say chemical because sometimes they use chemicals. Some of the companies use chemicals that can't afford the real sophisticated process. They use hexane. They'll mix a hexane into it, and then they'll take the plant and they'll crush the plant up into small pieces, and they'll grind it up, and then they'll put it in a system, and they'll heat it up, and they'll put some organic material on it, and they'll flash it off, and they'll get the oil behind, you know, get the oil in hexane or organic, and they'll flash it off, and that's how they get the oil. Some of them use cold pressing. They'll just like going through a press. You know, they put the plant in a press, and they put a lot of pressure on it, and the temperature is cool, and they press it, and they squeeze that oil out. Either way, and there are other processes they have to go through even still to clean out the other materials. So it's still a process. It's a manufacturing process. But they're using natural products that do get to the end material that they market to you and I. On the other hand, pharmaceuticals, they're not really interested in what the nutraceuticals people are interested in. See, the nutraceuticals people, they're interested in the whole substance most of the time. In other words, you know, when they get vitamin E, they're just interested in all of the vitamin E they can get out of the wheat. You know, you can get vitamin E from the wheat or the nuts or from the fish oil, okay? They're interested in all of it, the stuff. They're interested in all of the polyphenols they can get from the green tea leaf when they distill it. Pharmaceuticals are only interested in one thing. They'll beat something down, man, like a dog. You know, they'll go through one process of research and spend $20 million, maybe $10 million researching, trying to get that one product or see can they synthesize that one product. And let me make this clear. Pharmaceuticals, they already have an idea of what works. They know green tea works. But they can't sell you green tea because they can't make a profit off of it. You can go to the store and get green tea. So they can't tell you, oh, come get our green tea for your asthma acetylcysteine to clear up your mucus. A lot of people don't know if you got mucus and congestion, always coughing, just take you 1,500 milligrams of acetylcysteine, 1,500 to 2,000 milligrams a day, and within about 10 days, it's gone. And if you stay on a regime of about 500 a day, you'll never have congestion in your lung cavity. They use this already in the hospital when people come in with congestion, okay? If your kidneys are hurting and your back, you can take some N-acetylcysteine. That's the antidote to keep your kidneys from flopping out on you when you come to the hospital, but so they can stabilize you and try to protect your kidneys. They should be on dialysis. They know this. They'll never tell you that. So what they do, they say, okay, well, you know, green tea works, but we can't sell green tea. So they'll research, they'll start trying to develop a process in the laboratory to develop a molecule, one molecule, not all of the 20 that come with green tea, but they'll find the best one, the most effective one, and then they'll try to synthesize it. Then once they synthesize it, then they say, okay, let's change it just a little bit so we can get a patent on it. And as long as it can work close to the green tea, we're good to go. So they'll spend another $10 million synthesizing it. Then once they got it done, they'll test it and get the FDA approval. And the FDA pretty much rubber stamps everything nowadays because they get paid money. People don't know the FDA get over $400 million a year from pharmaceutical companies. You know, that seems to be a conflict of interest, but that's how they roll up there in D.C. nowadays. And I'm telling you something, I'm not just throwing you numbers. You can look it up under the government budgetary, I think it's called the GOB or something, Monica. I don't know what they call that. All that's under that.
Yeah.
It's under National Budgetary something. I forgot the name. And you can get all this different.
Congressional Budget Office.
Yes, you can look at the Congressional Budget Office, and they get every office broken down, every administrative office broken down, and you'll see where they're getting their funding from. Okay? But I'm not, this is just another program. We're only dealing with this. Okay, so once they get it approved, then they build a manufacturing plant, and it may cost them, you know, if they don't have one already that they can modify, it may cost them another $200 million to build a manufacturing plant. So they didn't spend about $230 million. So they got to get their money back. So they file a patent on it, and that's why they sell it, because they know they're going to make $2 or $3 or $4 or $5 billion over the course of the life of a drug. Most drugs don't last longer than 7 to 10 years before either they become obsolete or they find out that they're too dangerous and they take them off the market. But they already got their money now, so it doesn't matter. So that's the deal between a nutraceutical and a pharmaceutical. Pharmaceuticals are interested in developing drugs or products that they can patent. They can give you the same or similar effect that a natural product. Most of the products that you get in pharmaceuticals are copies. They're bad copies, but they're copies of natural products. Did somebody research something at the University of Oregon? Somebody research something at the University of Michigan? Somebody researched something at Howard University? They saw it. They said, let's try to make this into a product. They developed a similar molecule. They patent it. They sell it. Nutraceuticals, they know this material works from green tea leaf. They know this works from the Melaleuca plant. Let's just extract the oil out and sell you the oil. That's it. We're not trying to determine what all in the oil that's the best one. We'll let the physical scientists do that. We just want to get it to you for your benefit. That's the difference between the two.
Oh, good answer.
Okay, I didn't
want
to interrupt, but come back and say, now what was the name of the natural product that you said for mucus and kidney can help you with?
It's not a natural product. To say, here's one of these products I was talking about in the lab that you can synthesize. It's cysteine. Cysteine is actually the product. Okay, you can take cysteine. The problem with cysteine is being an amino acid. Cysteine is one of those amino acids that the high consumption of it. You have to take a lot of it to get it into the system because, a lot of amino acids. Much of them are destroyed, when they're consumed. And particularly when you have bacterial infection in the lung cavity, the bacteria are very effective in modifying different natural substances. Now, that's why they give us so many problems, because of the continued use of antibiotics and other substances and, of course, you know, bad eating and other things. These bacteria, they mutate, and so a lot of amino acids don't always give you the effect. They have to be protected. In acetyl a cysteine, NAC, as it's called, the acronym for it or the common name for it. You can go in any reliable health food store and get NAC. NAC cannot be modified by the bacteria because it has a protective group on it. And that's the material that they use in medicine a lot as an antidote. That the intake of NAC on a daily basis will clear up your mucus problems.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, that leads me into a question too. Then I had. Nowadays, when we go in, we see the word green tea everywhere. We see it in our soft drinks. We see it in our toothpaste. We see it into our skin products. It's just everywhere. What is it about green tea, and really, is it believable, just because something has green tea in it, that we want to purchase that item? Does it make a difference?
Yes. Green tea is a food, is actually a food substance that has been consumed for thousands of years in East Asia, and I would say probably in some parts of India. And a lot of times in the movies, if you ever seen the old movies, like the Kung Fu movies with Bruce Lee and these guys, and you always see these guys drinking tea. Well, that was the tea they was drinking, green tea. And there's much history in Chinese history, Japanese history, on the recorded medicinal effects of green tea. Well, like, you know, many Western scientists, they don't believe a lot of the, you know, written history medicine. It's just surprising because that's how Western Renaissance of medicine came, by looking back over or reviewing what had already came before, and then much of that was extrapolated from the scientists in Andalusia, which is the peninsula of Spain and Sicily, during the Moorish Empire. This is on the history. So, you know, with a Western influence from the work of those scientists and the work that they had recorded from their visits to the Far East, to China and India, and brought back on this side of the world. So it's surprising that the West is like that. But in any event, that's a little history. The thing is that the green tea, there's much interest in it because of the Chinese research about 20 years ago that seemed to indicate, that, or at least imply, that the consumption of green tea prevented cancer of the throat. And they had all these studies of people who smoked and people who didn't smoke, and then people who smoked and consumed green tea, and people who smoked and didn't consume green tea versus people who did not smoke and consume green tea. And it was it was amazing. It was like 90-some% of those people that smoked didn't come down with throat cancer versus the people that did smoke and didn't consume the green tea. That brought interest among the West because, you know, we're heavily involved in trying to find cures for cancer, breast cancer, colon cancer, pancreatic cancer, lymphatic cancer, etc. So we're looking for pharmaceutical companies looking for new avenues. They begin to research the green tea. So over the last 20 years, there's been a lot of research, and not just in America, but in Europe. And essentially what they found is that obviously it appears that green tea does block the onset of cancer. It won't reverse cancer if the cancer has already developed or matured to a certain stage, the earlier data suggested it won't reverse it. But the data does strongly imply, and it's almost an accepted conclusion now, that it will prevent the onset. So if you don't have it, if you keep it in your diet, then you have a good chance that you won't get it, at least in the throat. We know in the throat and obviously in the colon. We're not sure about the breast yet. When I say we, I'm speaking for the scientific community. But we are pretty confident in the throat and the colon, you know, and possibly the pancreas, that you will not get the cancer there, okay? Because cancers are specific to different organs. That's how, you know, miraculous the body is. So green tea does work just for prevention onset of cancer. We do know that it's good to kill certain bacteria, even in the mouth now, for the gums. We also know that green tea helps assist certain minerals in destroying bacteria. We now know that green tea can help affect blood pressure. Okay? So, yes, green tea is showing to be have a wide variety of medicinal applications. The only thing you have to understand is that when you're looking for green tea, make sure you're getting green tea and not a green tea look-alike. The green tea, that's different, it comes from the leaf. It's steamed distill. And then from the leaf, you get this oil, which, you know, they flash off and they separate and you get your product. You get your product. However, many companies will just sell you green tea leaf. They'll just grind the leaf up, you know, and maybe throw some roots up in there, you know, and put it in a capsule. They won't tell you green tea extract, nor will they tell you green tea standardized extract. They'll just say green tea. Well, right. You better be careful. Yeah, you may have seen that, Monica and Gary. You better leave that alone. It is the green tea. That's true. But it may not be what you want or what you need. Okay? You need the polyphenols, so you need the extract of green tea. And it should be standardized to the catechins. The catechins are another group of polyphenols. Green tea contains probably 60 to 100 different compounds that we know of. Some people say 60, some men say have isolated 100. But out of that, there's a group called the catechins, which are known to be the most effective. And even within that group, there are four catechins, of which the epigallocatechin gallate, I can't use the acronym because I can never say it right, but I have to say the whole thing out, is the most active. But there are three other materials that are also active. And the green tea is standardized. They have all of them. And they all work in a synergy. See? So if you're going to take green tea, I don't care if it's in a mouthwash. If they say green tea, you leave it alone. If they say green tea extract, you might want to call the company and ask them, what do you mean by extract? But if they say green tea extract standardized to epigallocatechin gallate, then go and get that product because you know they've done their job. And that's to skimmy on green tea.
So basically a lot of that can be just in the marketing and people capitalizing on the popularity of people wanting to use green tea. But just because it says green tea, we have to understand what part of the where the green tea is coming from, if it's been standardized, if it's an extract, if it's a leaf, or whatever it is.
Exactly. That's you have to be knowledgeable to know that a lot of times green tea is just a buzzword, and they can say
right. Green
tea, and that's not fraud. It may very well be green tea, but if they don't say green tea extract. And even more so, I would suggest green tea standardized to the catechin group In other words, you may see something say polyphenols 60%, parentheses, catechins 40%, and in parentheses, epigallocatechin gallate, you know, so much percent. When you see a product like that, that's a very good product. Okay, so that's what you should be looking for when you're looking for green tea. But we're going to take a quick break right now. You guys keep your questions and hold on to them. Again, this is Health Talk Live. You can call in 347-202-0758. That's 347-202-0758. Ask the scientist. You got a question, I got an answer. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. This is Health Talk Live. I'm your host, MD Shaheed, along with Gary and Monica. Call in now. Ask the question. We'll give you an answer. You can call in now at 347-202-0758. That's 347-202-0758. Get in on the conversation right now. You can ask any questions. Ask us any questions. We'll be very freely ready to answer your questions on health, nutrition, science, chemicals, nutraceuticals, pharmaceuticals, what's real and what's not real in the health area, in the health field, Health Talk Live. a product of Excel Nutraceuticals. For more information about Excel Nutraceuticals and all our fine natural-based products, do visit our website at www.xcel-n.com. Okay, Gary and Monica, we got any more questions you would like to ask?
Well, Gary, I'll let you go. You have another question?
Yeah, I did. I had a question about, I've heard a lot here lately, I think it's called Stelara, and I've seen a lot of commercials. This company, this product called Stelara, and they talk about I'd like to know, what is plaque psoriasis? I've been hearing that quite a bit lately.
Plaque psoriasis is a new name for basically fundamental psoriasis. Psoriasis is broken down. It's about two or three different types. It's not like eczema, but that's where you have psoriasis that has the raised skin tissue. It almost looks like you can pull it off. I guess it looks like if you've ever had a sore, a really big sore or a burn, maybe that's a burn, a really big burn. Or if you've seen somebody with a big burn, pardon me, on their skin, and as it heals, you see a scab that comes on it. And you see a lot of kids, young people, when that scab gets a certain maturity to it, it tends to look like it's going to flake off. And some people go and pull it off when it's not even ready to come off, and then you still see the little tender skin, the meat under the scalp. Well, that's how the plaque psoriasis looks. It has these raised, scabby type all over the person's body. And it's generally very crusty or cruddy. If you're very light-skinned, it'll be red-looking, maybe even yellowish, reddish-yellowish-looking, depending upon the severity. And if you're darker, it'll be more whitish-looking, ashy-looking. And it's all over. And it'll tend to flake. After a while, it'll flake off. And some people have it real bad. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen, and I'm not trying to make a comic, a joke here, it's a serious problem, but to give you how extreme it could be, you ever seen any of those old Charlie Brown pictures where you see Pig, I think his name was Pigpen, it seemed like every time he moved, this dust come off of him. Well, that's kind of how that psoriasis is. And when it does flake, it leaves an open, just like the scalp, sometimes is not completely healed under there, and you can see the tissue, you know, the tissue that can get infected, and of course, have other complications, skin complications. So it's itchy and it's flaky. It's a very I wouldn't say embarrassing, maybe. Could you say that, Guillermo? I don't know if it's embarrassing. What's another term? It's I guess you could say it's embarrassing. I don't know if you say it's embarrassing, but it's what? It's a lack of a definition right now. But anyway, it's not desirable. I mean, that's a good thing. It's not desirable in a look on people. You know, some people have psoriasis and it's just reddish skin. Ashy, reddish, dry skin. But in this case, this actually forms like flakes. You know, I don't know if you've seen people. I've seen people like that, where you can actually see the flakes on the skin. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. I've heard so much about it here lately, and watching a judge. Karen, I think, and had a young man on there who said when he shakes his hair, it's just these big flakes come out.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, we got about 5 minutes left on the show. Anybody got any remaining questions, or if you want to call in quickly before we're off the show, again, our call-in number is 347-202-0758. Any remaining questions you want to have addressed?
Well, let's do one quickly. You talked about this early a little bit when you were talking about the FDA. Can you just primarily kind of go over again that when the FDA, do they actually have scientists that go in and do research when they approve a drug or something in the market?
When the FDA is approving something for general market use to the American public, the FDA is supposed to protect the American public from harmful or dangerous chemicals or drugs. In other words, to prevent poor management, poor research, sloppy work from getting through the system. You know, the product, it's kind of like a buffer to keep exposed to these things from getting to the system. But the FDA is not nearly big enough to handle all of the applications that come in for approval. And so much of all the work is based on the companies that are submitting drugs for approval. And the FDA assumes that the company did due diligence and use good scientific methods and procedure and scientific acumen and proceeding to release a product to the general public. So the FDA basically just reads through it. If it meets the protocol, they're supposed to see whether or not their peers, you know, scientific peers mean people who are also in the business, people who also do research. They could be at the university level, academic level. If it matches with a jazz with all of what's out there, then they'll let it be approved. And that's why you see so many things that come through, and then years later they have to be recalled. So that's the FDA. But they don't really do hardly any research. They do have small research if they want to take a product from, let's say, if there's a something was contaminated, they have labs that they can look at just for that particular problem for contamination. But to prove whether or not something really works, that's up to the companies that's submitting those drugs or those products for approval. In any event, we've had a good show today, Monica and Gary, a lot of information. You guys really stretched my mind to its limits. You know, in any event, our show is closing out. We've had a pretty good show again. A lot of good information that our listening audience benefited from. Again, I'd like to thank Gary and Monica for being on the show and helping me out today. And we'll be back again either next Saturday or Sunday for another edition of Health Talk Live. I'd also like to thank our listening audience for tuning into the show. I saw we did have a couple of people listening. Don't be afraid to ask questions. This is your day when we say ask the scientists. So do come back next week. Health Talk Live is a project of XFL Nutraceuticals. Do check out XFL Nutraceuticals, all its natural and organic-based products, all our hair products, products for eczema. Do go to our website at www.xcel-n.com, or you can call us at 1-800-977-3981. I'd like to let you know now that all music, songs, sound, or recordings played during Health Talk Live are the sole possession, ownership, and the copyright of Stop 2R2G Entertainment. Unauthorized copying, duplication, or rental of any of these recordings is a violation of all applicable laws. If you're an upcoming singer, if you're just a rapper, or you're already in the business, you need some fresh sound, need some good beats, you can contact 2R2G Entertainment at info@xfl-en.com. Okay, that's going to do it for us today. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 10 a.m. for another edition of Health Talk Live. I'm your host, MB Shaheed. Do take care and have a nice day.